The Rosie on the House Arizona Hour, driven by Sanderson Ford.
Look at me, I'm a train on a track. I'm a train, I'm a train, I'm a chicken train, yeah. Look at me, I'm going somewhere. I'm a train, I'm a train, I'm a chicken train, yeah.
Oh, and we're going somewhere this segment. We're going all over. The Gadsden Hotel in Douglas, Arizona was one of the last grand hotels in the country, opened in 1907. It was burned in 1928 and promptly rebuilt. And the original telephone switchboard from 1929 is still on display at the Gadsden Hotel in Douglas, Arizona. But we're going to take a quick sidestep off of trains. There's a lot going on in above us. The SpaceX had that big launch landing this week. The... This one kind of creeped me out. The Wall Street Journal, their space issue, titled Future of Everything, talked about the potential mining of the moon. I mean, don't we kind of need that for tides and everything? But they're going after Helium-E.
Helium-3.
Helium-3.
Three, yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
A metric ton of gold is worth $42 million. A metric ton of helium-3, $5 billion. 119 times more valuable than gold.
Because it's used as an energy source, they think it's a much more efficient energy source. Is that how that works? I think helium-3.
I just don't know if we should be mining on the moon.
Yeah. It reminds me of Lost in Space.
I don't care what value of that is. I don't know that the moon is our answer for mining. But we also had the first photograph released of a black hole, and we took time this week to visit with Dr. Sky about what it means.
You know, I don't think anybody really truly understands this. You talk to some of the astrophysicists, and there'll be different interpretations. And the image that was just produced here is quite fascinating. The whole story goes like this. A telescope called the Event Horizon Telescope, which, by the way, is not an optical telescope. It's a series of radio telescopes. And they use the side of the entire Earth. They call it a fancy term called interferometer. They use each of these baselines, and they just extend it like a giant ruler so that they can get better resolution in radio waves. So what they did, they were looking into the Milky Way galaxy. At the center of the core of the Milky Way is an alleged black hole called Sagittarius A. And that's what I thought they were going to be imaging. But unbeknownst to me and a lot of people, their research has gone to this strange galaxy called M87. And it's 55 million light years away. And what they've actually done, and you have to salute these scientists, Romy, because they've actually got the first so-called image of some area around a black hole called an event horizon. And as people are having coffee this morning, I'll try to make this as simple and direct as possible. Inside a black hole is something called singularity. That's where all the light energy of whatever it's pulling in, it cannot escape. It's this single point. As you go away from that, this radius of the singularity is called the event horizon. This is this black area that we see in this image. So if you're in space, you would see this deep, dark black thing, like maybe like a giant black ball bearing in space. And what's interesting is on the other side of that, on our side, nothing obviously can escape from that event horizon. Everything from that point gets stuck. So here's a simpler way to put it. If you take the radius of singularity, you have something at the edge of this, which is where the escape velocity of light is so powerful, nothing can escape it. To put it in simpler terms, to make the sun a black hole, you'd have to collapse it, Romy, down to about 2 miles in diameter. So if the sun were collapsed, it would then seemingly become a black hole. If you did that with the Earth, how about this? The Earth's size would be 9 millimeters in size. So this is bizarre. So there's really, kudos to the scientists that they even got images of something like this. The first time they've actually been able to image this. So what Hawking was talking about, another scientist, there really does exist this enigma called a black hole out there in space.
You know the most amazing part of all of this? This image proves once and again Einstein's theory of relativity. How many years removed are we from that? And it's taken how many billions of dollars in this research to figure out what he did with a graphite pen and a piece of paper? What kind of mind did this man have?
Totally incredible, Romy. Stuff that, you know, they say genius is obviously so special.
Two more telescopes are being added to the event horizon, one in Greenland and another at Kitt Peak National Observatory right here in Arizona.
Our claim to fame.
There are two opportunities to learn more about this. One is with Dr. Sky. April 27th, go to dollysteamboat.com, and their steamboat ride, they kick off late in the evening, and they go ride out Canyon Lake on the steamboat and talk astronomy. They'll be covering that. Also, U of A will hold a free lecture on the efforts that required in this photo. It's April 17th, this Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. at the Nature Resource Building, number 2, room 120 in Tucson. A couple opportunities to learn a little bit more about it. But back to trains. Dr. Sky, are we building a train to
Dr.
the moon
Sky,
yet?
How about Dr. Dean?
Dr. Dean. Well, I got all kinds of doctors around me today.
Well, as significant as the black hole and these kind of scientific discoveries were to our present day, the railroad was such a huge significance to its day. There's a historians often make that kind of equation that the space race, what it did for the 20th century, railroads did for the 19th century. So there is a connection there. It's just building a railroad to the stars, right?
Different kind of horsepower.
Exactly. I did want to kind of point out, you know, to the north, we have railroads arriving that helps with the Flagstaff. And as part of that arrival, the Atlantic Pacific Railroad heads out. They get a land grant of about 14 million acres and a $100 million in financing. And off they go. And eventually in 1881, they finally arrive at Flagstaff and then continue on over to Needles, California. And that's how we get that northern track across there. Then from there, they spur down to Prescott. And they have a little one that spurs off down to some of the southern Arizona towns off the Southern Pacific one. And then you get every little mine wants their spur because the easier they can get their ore to market through the trains. And so we end up with that. Those little lines that go everywhere, including the little one that goes up to the canyon at that time.
The mining stats that Nicole put together for you on this were incredible. The 445 mines, 72 facilities, 11 smelters.
Yeah,
that's big numbers for a population at the time of, you know, what was it on that census, less than 40,000 people?
Yeah, less than 40,000 people. And you know, with copper has always been one of our five C's, and that's very important. But we do have some gold mines, some silver mines here, but it's mostly copper, which is an important ingredient in the industrializing alloys that they need back east. And so it's just profit, make money, and the railroads are really helping them do that, making our state's economy grow. I also think that the kind of interesting is the politics that come around when we build the road, railroad down to our territorial capital.
I generally don't put politics and interesting in the same sentence.
That's
that's a personal preference, right, though.
Well, it's funny because, again, I talk about this as a microcosm. And when we look at the railroad build between up at Flagstaff area down towards Prescott, you've got what's called the New York Syndicate, which is this group of investors that wanted to control this versus local mining interests that wanted to build the railroad and finance it. And they go back and forth, and the territorial legislature has to get involved. The territorial governors are trying to negotiate this, and they come to a compromise. But even if they come to a compromise, there's still the factions between the two as they try to, again, manipulate the political system to try to take advantage, to control these things, because it's all about, at the end of the day, that profit. So we can't escape any of those national kind of things when we look at our microcosm here of railroading in Arizona.
And today, we've still got a very active rail system that was all, you know, the foundation laid from 150 years ago.
Yeah, you can see railroads all through when you drive around the state of Arizona. There's some abandoned railroads and things, but
a lot of which have been turned into hiking trails, and that's a lot of fun, especially because, as you mentioned, you know, we're looking for elevation.
Mm-hmm.
An abandoned railroad track is a very easy hike.
Right. It's like a 1.5 to 3% grade. It's very, very
good. I can handle that anytime.
Yeah. And while we might think that that's kind of a scar on the land, it's actually kind of a way of reclaiming the land in a more green and efficient way to get people to use those without building new trails and things. Plus, we also see evidence of these things as you drive to California. You see the train on the side. You see, go up to Flagstaff, the train station, the depot is very important. We preserve our train depots in Prescott and Flagstaff and Tucson and Phoenix.
Wickenburg's Chamber of Commerce is the old train station.
Mm-hmm. And so we're reusing those old buildings for new things. And And you can't escape that if you just look around on the environment, look around where you're at, you can't escape the impact of this, even though you're sitting at a traffic light or at a train stop and you're counting the minutes because you're late to work. Trains are still really important to Arizona, even today.
I cross one at Grand Avenue and Northern, and about once every 3 or 4 months, I
get stuck.
I get stuck and a little late to work Saturday mornings waiting on the train.
And of course, the secret if you're going up Grand is to catch the train and follow it because the lights are always green going up Grand.
You just have to be disciplined to pace the same as the train because you're only going about 30 miles an hour. But if you just lay off that gas and pace it, you'll go the whole way.
Yeah, get all the way up to Sun City and right on out. Yes, yeah. One of the other important things I want to kind of point out about our railroads in Arizona, not just the economics, is you understand that they were also had some negative effects to those things. Obviously, they were used for the military to help put down Native American revolts and to subjugate those populations. They have an environmental impact of hunting and exploitive resources and things. So the story of the trains is not always glorified, but they have to take the good with the bad in these kind of stories, and they are part of the big part of building America. And we have here in Arizona just a part of that story.
And, would you change it?
I don't think you could.
Exactly.
You don't get where we are today. And, of course, the Highway Act in the 1950s supplants railroads to where now trucking and automobiles and travel by car becomes kind of the replacement to that. And so train travel diminishes. We do have an Amtrak line, I think, that comes through in northern Arizona.
Yeah, at Flagstaff. That's the Southwest Chief.
Yeah, so
Gary D's dad worked on the rails.
Yeah, I'm a Southern Pacific man.
Ah, very good, very good.
And he even streams the live stream from the Flagstaff Depot.
Oh, yeah. I tell you, I love...
the train's coming. I'm like, okay.
at the stop.
Virtual rail fan on YouTube, folks, if you're a train fan. Go ahead.
That's great, because it's part of our lore. It shows up in our musical history, all that kind of stuff. Even Will Rogers, said something about railroads. He said, even if you're on the right track, you'll get run over if you just sit still.
Hey, good point. So,
life lessons from Will Rogers.
He had a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot of good ones. Now, there's one more interesting point, but I'm going to save for our next break that actually kind of goes back to the beginning of it all and the purchase of the U.S.-Mexico land when the Gadsden purchase, because we will need a little bit more time than we have left in this segment to cover that.
Sure, and that's related to the Gadsden Hotel, which you just mentioned.
That's why I was going to save it for the next segment.
We're on the same page.
The light just went on for Gary.